Hello and welcome to this podcast from the BBC World Service. Please let us know what you think and tell other people about us on social media. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
It's time to hear what you think of the BBC World Service in Over to You. This week, the boss of the World Service joins us to talk about the inexorable rise of fake news.
Don't unthinkingly pass on news that you're not certain the origin of. That's really, really helpful.
And did you learn your English by listening to the World Service? We go online to find out what the BBC's latest offering is for students.
It looks at one phrase and one phrase only, and by the end of the programme, you know how to use it in everyday situations.
I'm Rajan Datar, and this is Over to You. Now, back in February, we heard from the new boss of the BBC World Service, Jamie Angus, about the issues and concerns that he feels need tackling. And first and foremost amongst his current bugbears is the problem of fake news. Recently, the BBC had to issue a statement after a fake survey on voting intentions in Karnataka in India began circulating on WhatsApp. And we know the issue of fake news and the possibility of being conned into thinking a story is from the BBC World Service bothers you.
Hello, over to you. This is James Dowling Healy in Connecticut, USA. Even if we did opt to attempt to police the internet, we would be faced with the practical impossibility of such a task. I believe the BBC World Service is best served by sticking to the things that make it one of the most credible sources out there. Quality, detailed, and objective reporting that is based on real information from multiple verified sources. I personally try to avoid fake news by checking multiple, preferably ideologically diverse, news sources. I also check back on a story to see how it has developed.
Well, joining me now in the studio is the director of BBC World Service Group, Jamie Angus. Hello, Jamie.
Hello, hi.
Let's start with that latest example of a fake news story about the Indian elections purporting to come from the BBC World Service itself. Can you, first of all, just describe it? What does it say?
So it's a link with a picture attached that's circulating on chat apps in India, and it purports to be a pre-election survey of seat projections for this regional Indian election. And it is fake. The BBC doesn't do that kind of seat projection work anyway. It's relatively sophisticated, and it's not untypical for the kind of thing we're seeing, which is that people realise that if they share faked up stories in, as a picture, if you like, on chat apps, lots of people won't bother to double check them. In all these cases, we've taken the decision to come out publicly and say, we know this is circulating, it's not true. But I'm just interested in the last couple of months, these particular types of faked up stories, particularly circulating on chat and not on searchable web indexes, is something that's taken up more of my time.
And on that point, we have this from Andy Madaki, who's in Abuja in Nigeria.
The BBC should have a system to verify writers, just like Twitter, Facebook and Instagram have done with the blue tick. Also, all articles should originate from the BBC website or must have a link taking you back to the BBC website for you to confirm authenticity.
And on the issue of getting a second opinion, we have this from Samira Edemesumbe in Cameroon.
Every time I see breaking news, I do a proper investigation online to get a second opinion. In an age of modern technology, any half-baked troll can use BBC content to give their point an air of authenticity, because the messenger is the message.
If you connect to stories directly on our website or hear it or directly on our linear channels, you can be absolutely certain. If you read something from an authenticated BBC social account with a blue tick or similar, again, you can be certain. But the nature of digital distribution of news means that so much of our news is distributed on third-party platforms anyway, and some of it is distributed informally, kind of Samizdat style, by people on social chat apps.
Well, let's go to the issue of how you deal with it. What can the BBC do? Indeed, what can listeners do to combat this?
The listeners we've already heard from there have talked intelligently about sensible checks they themselves can make. The most important thing is just be aware before you share. So don't unthinkingly pass on news that you're not certain the origin of. That's really, really helpful. But also, if you do spot something which you really have concerns about, do try and bring it to the attention of BBC news bureaus in your region, because actually in all these cases, these have been sent in by listeners, viewers and readers, and we've taken action on them.
You want people to contact you, yeah?
Please do pass them on and we'll take the appropriate action where we can.
Jamie Angus, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Now, we'd love to hear what you think. So here is how you get in touch. You can email over to you at bbc.co.uk. You can call and leave a message on +44 144 960 9000, or you can tweet at OverToYouBBC. Finally for this week, have you learnt your English by listening to the BBC World Service? Perhaps you've been tuning in for quite some years, in which case you may recall English by radio, though this is no longer broadcast. But one listener in the Horn of Africa misses it.
I am Hamad Dawood. I'm calling you from Mogadishu, Somalia. I kindly request the BBC to resume the previous program English by radio, which had been intended for English learners in Somalia. This English program has been beneficial for both beginners and learners of English language, non-natives. Thank you very much.
Well, Hamad, we're not aware of any plans to bring English by radio back. However, I do know a man who can help you in your desire to improve your English with the BBC World Service by going online and learning about modern colloquialisms and turns of phrase that may confuse the non-native English speaker. So if you do feel out of the loop, and to cut a long story short before we go all over the shop, with me in the studio is BBC World Service Education Editor Paul Scott. Hello, Paul.
Hello, Martin.
Now, the editorial decision to end the radio series was made by senior managers of the BBC who've since left, so it's not fair to ask you to explain why teaching on the radio ended, but online, it's a different story.
We started moving into the internet, I suppose, really in the early days, 1996, and since then, we've exploded onto the internet. And it's not just colloquialisms anymore. It's everyday language, it's courses, it's features, it's quizzes. There's a huge range of different types of materials that people can use to help them learn English when they want to learn English. And, of course, we do podcasts, which include things like News Review, 6-Minute Grammar, and The English We Speak.
And The English We Speak, I believe, is the third most popular podcast on the BBC World Service.
Yeah, that's correct. It's, the last month it was 2.6 million downloads, making it the third most popular.
The English We Speak. From bbclearningenglish.com.
I'm Feifei.
And I'm Neil. Hey, Feifei, shouldn't we be celebrating?
Why?
Haven't we presented 100 of these The English We Speak programmes together?
100?
But Paul, it's a 3-minute weekly download, and no matter how entertaining it is that a real alternative to a half-hour radio programme?
I would say absolutely. I think you can learn in 3 minutes, providing the focus of the programme is really clear and the objective of the teaching is really clear. And that's what The English We Speak does. It looks at one phrase and one phrase only, and by the end of the programme, you know how to use it in an everyday situation. A 30-minute programme is good, but it is only as good as its teaching, and you can learn nothing from a really bad 30-minute programme.
Ray Moos in Kampala in Uganda is a very keen listener to The English We Speak, so much so, in fact, he's been prompted to send in this question, prompted by what he says he sometimes hears news presenters say. And we're going to perhaps unfairly ambush you on this one, Paul. Perhaps you can answer, Ray.
Is it okay to say 53 minutes past the hour, or is it better to say 57 minutes to the top of the hour?
Well, good question, Ray. I think it depends on the situation. In general, everyday speech, you wouldn't be saying that to your friends or to work colleagues because it feels a bit awkward and a bit clumsy. You may obviously hear it from news presenters, or you might hear it if you ask somebody for a bus time, and it gives you that little bit of clarity, and obviously presenters will play with the language. But in everyday speech, I wouldn't use it. You'd be better off saying it's 2:53 or it's 6:07. I'm quite lazy, so I wouldn't even be that precise. I would say it's almost 6:10 or it's almost 5:06.
Very interesting. Thank you to the BBC's education editor, Paul Scott, and to everybody who sent in a question. And remember, we'd love to know what you think about anything you hear on the BBC World Service. I'm Rajan Dasar, looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Goodbye.